You can't come to a day sit like this without thinking about what is this sitting? What's my intention in this sitting? Actually, I also need the clock so that I can stay on track. Thank you very much, Edie. Sitting is just being. We Uchiyama Roshi says we sit in our that place in our consciousness before it starts dividing the world into pieces. It's not really a place, but it is that consciousness that we have prior to dividing the world into the myriad things. So that when we're abiding in that consciousness, and it feels a little too cold in the room, it means the ego has popped up a little bit in the middle of that consciousness. The ego, our dividing mind, the mind that divides, our ego has popped up a little bit and divided the world into hot and cold. And we can say, oh, it's just 40 minutes. I'm not sitting outside in the elements in the snow. I can put that ego to rest for now. And then we can settle back down into our consciousness before our mind and ego divides it into many pieces, hot and cold for one. Or if we're sitting in front of the window and we say, oh, it's gotten bright, we know that the ego has popped up a little bit out of that undivided consciousness. The ego has popped up and divided the world into light and dark. And we might say, oh, I can just lower my eyelids a little bit for the rest of these 40 minutes and settle back down into our consciousness that before it divides the world up into light and dark and hot and cold and itch and scratch and smells. We just want to sit in that consciousness. And why would we want to do such a thing? And maybe if we came here originally not just this morning, but the first time we thought about meditation, maybe if we came here because we said, oh, I need to relax more. And I've heard that meditation is a way to relax. Or maybe if we came here because we heard that meditation was a way to understand the great matter, life and death, suffering. Maybe in our sitting since then, we've found that all of those questions, though they're all very important, they too seem to disappear when we taste, maybe just briefly in our 40-minute sits, but maybe we've had a taste of that undivided mind, that consciousness before we divide up the world. And maybe it's felt like home. It's like it's a place of refuge. In the practice period, we studied the song of the grass roof hermitage, where the undying person in that hermitage is sitting with undivided mind. Maybe we've found that this undivided mind that we can settle into on these quiet mornings, maybe just briefly, but maybe we can settle into it. Maybe we've found that that's our hermitage, that that's our home, that that's a place of ease and spaciousness and boundlessness. Can we really find an edge to that? Does it stop someplace at the end of the path, maybe, or that consciousness that doesn't divide anything up? Maybe we've gotten that perfume of boundlessness and spaciousness and ease and harmony. So we want to get to know that place pretty well. And of course, our Buddhist practice, our Zen practice, isn't just about coming here and sitting for 40 minutes and visiting that place of boundlessness and ease and spaciousness and harmony. It's about enacting our lives out of that mind, rather than out of the mind that has divided everything up into this is better than that, this is preferable to me, that's not so preferable. Our conditioned mind, our karmic mind, where we usually run our lives from, we've found in our sitting, and we've heard the teachings of Buddha, that we'd like to run our lives from the ground of spaciousness and harmony and ease. that that's our intention. And we know from experience how easy it is to run our lives from our old habits. And we want to have our way of being in the world come out of kind of our default consciousness, the place where it all starts. Before we've divided the world up, we've got this default consciousness of undivided mind. From which everything springs out of ease and harmony and spaciousness and openness. So we're trying to get good at this. We're trying to get good at accessing our default consciousness. Because we've had a little experience now with our, I mean, none of us, all of us have been sitting for a long time here. We know each other pretty well. We know that that's true for us. I think if we just came for relaxation, and that's all we got out of meditation, we wouldn't keep coming back. And we definitely wouldn't sign up for a day set. I think we've discovered the truth of our meditation, and we've learned the truth of Buddha's First Noble Truth, that we suffer, and that the cause, the Second Noble Truth, the cause of our suffering is we've divided the world up into many little pieces of this and that, right and wrong, and when we don't have all the preferable pieces with us at all times, that's suffering. And so we've learned that the liberation from suffering is right with us all the time. That part of our mind, that default consciousness, that doesn't divide the world up into pieces at all. That just is always in boundless, spacious harmony. And before I go on too much more, I want to dedicate the merit of my inspiration for this talk to an insight meditation teacher, G. Schultz, who I attended one of his lectures earlier in the week on our intentions. And of course, intention, right intention, is the second of the Eightfold Path. The first step on the Eightfold Path is right view. And right view is all about what we just talked about. It's about how do I remember that consciousness is undivided, and that suffering arises when we divide the world up. So how can I remember to act out of that undivided consciousness? And that's our view of the world. That's our view of reality. And the Buddha says that for liberation from our suffering, a good way to be liberated is to practice these 8 steps on the Eightfold Path. And number one is just keep it in mind that suffering arises when we divide the world, and can we always act out of our undivided mind? And so the second step on the Eightfold Path is this intention to always keep this in mind. The second step is sometimes thought of as the bridge between our undivided mind and the actions that come out of that undivided mind that bring about liberation from suffering, not only for this being, but at the same time liberates all others, also helps other people express their undivided nature. So these actions that we might think of, and we chant them on Friday mornings, we chant the Eightfold Path. So the third, fourth, and fifth are right speech, right action, and right livelihood. You know, our actions in the world, our jobs, our activities in the world, our thoughts and speech that we exhibit in the world with each other. When we're able to keep in mind the undivided nature of all things, we have the intention that our speech, our actions, and the work we do in the world, they too are going to support our intention, right intention. Number two, step number two, it's going to express our intention to liberate ourselves and others with undivided activity. So you know, we ask ourselves, if we've got this intention, we say, I'm getting in my car to go down to Staff of Life now. How can that activity express itself as my intention to liberate all beings from suffering? I'm just going to be gone for a half hour. Can I use this half hour choosing products to eat and consume that reflects that intention? And so I might, bring my own plastic bag so I don't have to use more plastic. I might even use a couple of my reusable non-plastic bags that might express my intention to relieve people from their suffering. I might choose foods that didn't cause suffering for any other beings. So, you know, and then when we come home, we might say, how can I use this half hour of cooking so that I'm not causing suffering for me or others. And so we might, okay, so I'm going to not keep the oven on longer than it needs to be to cook the food. I don't want to put any more hydrocarbons into the atmosphere. So that's how we enact our intention to save all beings, and how we act out of our undivided mind rather than our karmic consciousness that might preheat the oven a little too long. Six, seven, and eight of the Eightfold Path are about, you know, right energy, right mindfulness, right concentration. You know, at some point we know that the way we nourish ourselves to act out of our undivided mind. We've learned that that comes from this meditation practice. So we want to keep nourishing ourselves so that we're confident, so that we trust this undivided mind, so that we get good at our activities coming out of that undivided mind. So we practice those steps, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Meditation and really making sure the energy part is, you know, we really have it on our schedule to come to the Zen Center and sit with the rest of the Sangha. It's on our schedule. It's on our regular. It's a regular part of our lives now. We sit, you know, regularly at home. We sign up for these day sits a couple times a year, or we sign up for sesshin a couple times a year. We turn our energy and towards that and get it on our calendars, because we know that when we're doing meditation when we're mindful and we do concentrated meditation, it provides us with the nourishment that we need, and the practice that we need, and the confidence that we need to act out of our undivided mind. So that's why we practice these 8 steps, the Noble Eightfold Path, because we've learned in our meditation and in our life that this is the way that we are liberated from our own suffering, and how we liberate others from their suffering. And the Buddha talks about this intention, and says that our intention is nourished and is directed towards three things, nourished by and directed towards. It's nourished by our renunciation. And that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. I think that's an old word. It's an old word. It means what we're really looking at is we're looking at our own desires and saying, you know, if I'm always desiring things over there that will make this one happy, if I've divided the world into the things that make me happy and the things that don't, that's part of the division. But if I can really take a look at those desires that promote dividing the world up, if I can reduce those desires, I'm closer to saving myself and saving other beings. So I'm just going to take a look at my desires. So that's what renunciation is about, is just taking a close look, maybe in our meditation, at our desires and saying, yeah, my desiring nature, the desiring part of my ego, that's part of why I divide the world up. So I've got to take a look at my desires. Another way that the Buddha teaches us to nourish our intention of saving all beings from suffering is by goodwill, doing goodwill. And the way we do that is to promote loving kindness. Loving kindness, loving kindness doesn't have an object. I'm not loving kindness to Scott. I'm loving kindness to Kim. I was gonna get there. Loving kindness is kind of like the perfume. Loving kindness is what we take with us to Staff of Life. When we said, you know, I want to save all beings in this trip to the store. And just when we say that, just when we've got our reusable bags right next to us in the passenger seat as we drive, we're already, you know, we think that the exhaust coming out of the car is carbon monoxide, but it's really the perfume of loving kindness that is now, we're gonna take our vegetables to the counter, and if there's a long line, we're gonna say, gee, look at all these wonderful people who've come to this store with their reusable bags. It won't even bother us that the line is long because we are perfuming the world with loving kindness. And that's what goodwill is. And that's how we practice goodwill, is perfuming the world with loving kindness. And the third thing that the Buddha does is the third teaching on nourishing right intention is with harmlessness. And that's pretty obvious, that we've started this whole ball of wax saying that we're going to liberate ourselves and others from suffering, and we're all going to be acting as much as we can out of our undivided mind of spaciousness and openness and harmony. So, of course, we're going to have to practice harmlessness. And that's because we've already generated the compassion, the dharma of karuna, compassion, that wants to make sure that no one suffers and that suffering can be relieved. So the Buddha gives us these three practices to cultivate our intention to save all beings. We're going to renounce or take a close look at our desiring nature that divides up the world. We're going to perfume the world with loving kindness. Maybe the sweat that comes out of our bicycle trip to Staff of Life is a better example of the perfume that we're going to generate with our loving kindness. And we're going to practice compassion and harmlessness. When suffering arises, because we've already taken the vow, it's already our intention, it's already our way of being to relieve others from their suffering and ourselves. We're gonna be compassionate to ourselves when we don't have quite enough reusable bags when we get there. We're not going to admonish ourselves for our forgetfulness. We're going to say, you know, I've got to remember that. I have the intention to really make sure I've got enough reusable bags now. We're going to be compassionate even to ourselves. So why don't we walk for about 10 minutes now and compassionately stretch our legs and continue this practice of relieving ourselves and others from suffering. Thank you. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.